Is this any better?
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty. Or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Thanks for being here. And I'm glad to be here with you, our internet and satellite listeners. Today is Wednesday. It is the 16th of November in the year 2005. And I am filling in for Darren Weeks this evening. As you all know by now, Darren has stepped in and is broadcasting as Sweet Liberty Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday on the internet from WFAR, First Amendment Radio, and the satellite. And I've been canning, folks, since the beginning of September. I'm not quite sure, but I'm almost finished yet. It is delightful to be here with you this evening. And guess who our guest is tonight? Well, I'll tell you. Right after I share our spiritual message with you. This is from Matthew 5, beginning with verse 14. Jesus said, "Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid, and neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it gives light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven." And Alan Watt, thank you for being with us tonight. Alan?
Yes, sir.
Oh. Can you hear me okay?
You're very, very low.
That's amazing. I don't...
It's almost inaudible.
Shall we try to reconnect, Alan?
I think I'll try that.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, I believe Nicholas is there. And Nicholas, if you would play some music for just a minute. Alan is having trouble hearing me. Let us try to reconnect.
Okay.
Well, wait a minute, Alan.
Thank you. Okay, you're on. Hello? Jackie? Hello, Jackie? Hello? Thank you.
from a secret side of town. No mistaken, bonds are shaken, walls are breaking down. You can walk across the border tonight, unafraid to cross that line. Breathe the fresh air, kiss the free ground, leave your dark shadows behind. What will you do?
Nicholas, do you have me? Well, ladies and gentlemen, is this amazing? Do I have Alan here with me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay, I can hear you just a little bit, Alan.
You're pretty faint, too, yeah.
Okay, maybe Nicholas can give us a little bit more. I haven't had any real phone problems like this since we've been coming on the air together, Alan.
Yes.
And Nicholas said that twice when I called in, it answered and then dropped me.
Mm-hmm.
And he... Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we are with you now and with Alan Watt. And Alan and I have had a very fascinating 10-minute conversation here. And I'm very sorry about this. Alan?
Yes.
You could call it paranoia, but I just don't think that this is a coincidental. And I know
Even now you're fading out on me. Yeah.
Pardon?
Even now your voice is dropping.
Uh-huh. I know. I can't hear you very well either, but
yep.
I can hear you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you started out talking about the phases.
Yeah.
The changes, and I don't know if we can repeat a conversation. You mentioned the new American century, and I just want to say this before I interrupt you again, but... when you mentioned the new American century, it reminded me of the John Birch Society's magazine mm-hmm. called The New American.
Yeah.
And that magazine has been called The New American, as far as I know, right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And, of course, the John Birch Society is what was one of the first very active and very large organizations, controlled opposition.
Yeah.
And what you had said is, that nothing happens spontaneously.
No, it doesn't, no.
And I hope that our listeners can hear you and can
uh-huh.
hear me, and I'll listen real closely to be able to hear you.
Okay. Yes, we're given basically a Western approach to history, beginning mainly, in fact, England used to start with the Greeks and then the Roman Empire and all the various empires from then onwards, and then when you compare the other histories, even of the unearthed histories in Persia, or what was Persia, in Nineveh and so on, and then we go into the histories of India and other nations, we find it fills in the blanks, and we know that there's always been empires going right back through the thousands of years, where some countries seem to appear as the head of the empire, which incorporated other smaller countries, very much like the British Empire.
The empires, yes.
And
you continue.
Then
when you
realize that the new American century and the club that Cheney and Wolfowitz and so on all belong to, in their own writings, they say the same thing, that there's always been an empire ruling the good parts of the world, and now in the 21st century America is taking over from the English Empire and continuing the same thing in a world basis. And personally, I do think that's what the United States was created to do, was to bring in a new world order. That's on the seal and all the rest of it. Benjamin Franklin wrote about that, and so did Thomas Jefferson. They said that this was to be a federation of world states under world government, and they said it would be ruled eventually by 12 wise men, which is the Kabbalistic number for perfect government. So nothing happens by chance, and every so often we see this phase shift, and a phase shift in culture is where from the top down, because nothing comes from the grassroots in this system, through magazines, movies, all media, we see this sudden phase shift towards globalism, how we're all one world. We see the borders beginning to vanish. In fact, in Europe, you can drive from England right to Russia without being stopped now. And so that will eventually happen here too with the amalgamated Americas. And it's been written about by people at the United Nations that America would be one continent, one government eventually. And Karl Marx wrote about this very thing in the 1800s. A united Americas, a united Europe, and the third trading bloc would be the Pacific Rim nations. And that's exactly what we see. So it's never a coincidence when someone writes about this and puts out the format and we see it coming into view. Everything, we're taught that everything evolves through politicians, which is nonsense. They're just a pantomime show for the public. Everything is worked out by think tanks and strategists and social engineers, and we're going into this system now of a totalitarian type world government where the average individual will have everything planned out for him. And they've said themselves the duty of everyone ultimately will be to serve the state, and they mean the world state.
Yeah.
And when you look at the taxations that we pay today, we're actually paying, we're all working for government. Everyone works for government through hidden taxes and the purchases you buy, through property taxes and so on, school taxes. We're all working for government. So we're all employed already by government, and we're given no choices in the matter. So we cannot say we're free. We are run in a new scientific socialist type system. And experts, as they say, will and are running our lives. Coming down shortly, they hope to start inoculating us all by law, and we'll be given no choice.
They hope to start what, Alan?
Yes.
They hope to start what?
To the inoculations.
Oh, the inoculations.
Yeah, they've been hyping terror and fear by the media. It's all drummed up by the media, which is not new at all. Because Professor Carl Quigley talked about this very technique being used by the mainstream media prior to World War II to deliberately terrify the British into believing that they're going to be gassed from the air by the Germans. And they terrified the public of Britain for almost 3 years. And it was pure terror. It was all psychological warfare, so that the British people would be geared up to go and fight Germany.
Yes.
So we're seeing the exact same techniques by the media, talking about the coming plagues, the coming flu, and they're terrifying people and conditioning them to get them ready to simply accept it. And when they go to these lengths to make us all take this injection, it must be terribly important to the big boys that we do take this. And I'm pretty certain it's got nothing to do with the flu.
Right, well, in the first place, as you said, the avian flu has not even really done its transmutations yet to be able to affect humans.
Yeah.
But remember, I think it was one of our last broadcasts that we did, I had read a news article, people... I forget how many of them there were, over 100 of them in a large corporation that had taken flu shots, and then they found out that it was a fraudulent flu shot.
Yes.
And they didn't even know what was in it, but they didn't think it was going to hurt the people.
Yeah. I know.
But here's something that came to my mind just now. When they were talking about mandating the smallpox vaccine, Tommy Thompson, who was the former governor of Wisconsin, who was Secretary of Health and Human Affairs, I don't know if he still is or not, because they've, you know, been playing revolving door or musical chairs with those people, but I remember that he was quoted as saying that every person's dose would have their name on it.
Yes.
And that's what occurred to me just now as you were talking about how they're pushing the inoculations. The only reason that a person, that somebody's name would have to be on their personal dose of a vaccination would be the only thing I could think of, that it would probably be a chip going into a person's body.
Yes, and all the science magazines and blurbs on news media have been on about the nanotechnology, where they can inject these incredibly small microcircuits really into your system.
Right.
And they join up and basically make a tiny computer inside whatever part of the body they're programmed to reach.
Okay.
So...
Yeah, I don't think that's a reach. Do you, Alan?
Yes.
When they said that, because when they give vaccines, they give it according to the person's body weight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the amount.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason for a person's name to be on it unless something is being injected into their body that has all of their personal data in it.
Yes. And also they'd want to track you personally from then on with your medical history, illnesses, diseases, and so on, because they'll want to see the effects of all of this stuff once it's injected into you.
Right.
They've done this before. I mean, I think it was 1948, the U.S. Air Force sprayed Winnipeg in Canada, the city of Winnipeg, low level with the flying Fokker aircraft, and they sprayed some concoction over them with, in conjunction and permission of the Canadian government. And then they followed the health records of all the inhabitants over the next 15, 20 years to see which ones came down with cancers and so on.
And
so we are truly, totally all expendable.
And they actually came out and admitted it?
Yes, that's declassified now from the Canadian government.
Yeah. Well, this is something that I want to share in case we have new listeners on board.
Mm-hmm.
I've done this before, but this is... the last paragraph, or the last long paragraph and short paragraph in protocol number 10 of the protocols. They're called the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And this, by the way, is over, we know at least, was written 100 years ago. Because I think it wasn't at 1906 that it was published or whatever they do to it in the London... Museum. But anyway.
Yes, there was copies actually found in Paris in the 1860s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, and it was translated, I think, in about early 1920, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Translated into English. But it had been, I forget what the word they called it, but it was registered in London, in the London Museum or something in 1906.
Mm-hmm.
I just want our listeners to understand this, that it is at least 100 years old. And this says, this paragraph starts and it says, but you yourselves perfectly... Huh. Okay, listen to the one before this. I've got it highlighted. It says... And then the time has come to turn every form of government into our despotism. The recognition of our despot may also come before the destruction of the Constitution. The moment for this recognition will come when the people, utterly wearied by the irregularities and incompetence, a matter which we shall arrange for, of their rulers, will clamor, away with them, and give us one king over all the earth who will unite us and annihilate the causes of discords, frontiers, nationalities, religion, state debts, who will give us peace and quiet, which we cannot find under our rulers and representatives. And then listen to this, that you yourselves perfectly well know that to produce the possibility of the expression of such wishes by all the nations, it is indispensable to trouble in all countries the people's relations with their governments, so as to utterly exhaust humanity with dissension, hatred, struggle, envy, and even by the use of torture, which they're doing today, by starvation, by the inoculation of diseases. And we have to take a break here. And we'll be back right after this, folks.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773, and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first, and on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
All right, folks, we're back with you. It's Jackie Patru, your former hostess, and I'm sitting in for Darren Weeks tonight on Sweet Liberty. And our guest is Alan Watt. And, Alan?
Yes?
Okay, just wanted to make sure you're still there. Well, what I had read just before the break, written 100 years ago, that they were going to utterly exhaust humanity with dissension, hatred, struggle, envy, and even by the use of torture and starvation, by the inoculation of diseases, by want, so that the goyim see no other issue than to take refuge in our complete sovereignty in money and in all else. And the last little sentence says that if we give the nations of the world a breathing space, the moment we long for is hardly likely ever to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 100 years ago. And it appears, Alan, that about every 100 years, the elite, if you would, get together and take a look at their plan and see where it's going and lay out the next 100 years. or maybe
well,
the
I
details.
Well, I think it's even decided long before that.
No, but I mean the details of the next 100 years, Alan.
Yeah, yeah. They work it out probably. Actually, Revelations is part of the mystery religion. And that was written 2,000 years ago. And the reason it's in such mystic language is because it's not meant for those who are uninitiated to understand.
Uh-huh.
And yet they talk about the plagues, famines, wars, and so on, world government, you know,
yeah.
A world army and all that stuff. Because that was the agenda even then. And sure enough, over the last few hundred years, they've worked out the details of it, you see, and implemented them. And there are so many think tanks working with government, thousands of them really, interrelated, working on minute details of society and societal change, education, everything, that it boggles the mind. We are programmed from kindergarten onwards for everything that we will experience in our lives.
Alan, we are programmed from birth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because our parents have been programmed.
Yeah.
Even when you think of history, the way history is taught.
Yeah.
In the schools, in the colleges,
mm-hmm.
The teachers teach what they believe is true. Parents teach us what they believe is true.
Mm-hmm.
So our brainwashing starts from the moment
we're born. Oh, it's immediate, yeah.
Yes, it does.
It's a system. It's a true, a purpose-made system where at the bottom you're taught that everything evolves day by day and year by year, and politicians just deal with the crisis as they come along.
Yeah, right.
But no, nothing is further from the truth.
Well, you know, a good example right now, I mean, there are jillions of them, but these riots over there in France,
mm-hmm.
I understand the rioters are not even the French people, but they're aliens, they're foreigners who live there in France,
mm-hmm.
and allegedly why they're rioting is over lack of work and the pay and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't any spontaneous uprising.
No, I told people, see, I traveled all over Europe and I lived in different countries in the 70s and 80s, and I saw the massive influx into all of Europe, not by any invasion. It was by laws from the government, from the top, from every government.
Yeah, the immigration laws.
And in fact, Maggie Thatcher opened the borders and the gates, basically, to mainly to India and various Arab countries. And in the 70s, and this was a country that always screamed from the top that we were overcrowded, there's too many people. And yet they literally did away with the borders and said, come in. And I knew then that they were setting the stage for problems in the future, because they set the chessboard way in advance. And the laws that would eventually come out of all of that would change everybody's life. And they will use those people for strife.
Yep.
And France and Germany and many other countries have sponsored these people in, brought them in, promised them heaven on earth, and they haven't found it to be so. And now there's too many of them there too, and they're just more unemployed. So they're rioting. And this was set up to do exactly that. The laws that will come out of it will affect everybody of all colors, and that's the real intent of it. Carl Quigley said wars themselves, he said, are not to defeat an enemy. It's for creating social change on whole populations. And he said you can get more done in 5 years of war and struggle than 50 years of peace in a social engineering format. So that's what we're seeing coming happening right now.
And just before Nicholas got a hold of me to let me know that we weren't on the air, when we began our conversation, the thought occurred to me that the only time, what I did is ask if you think it was the, quote, prehistoric people who actually were free, and then realized, and you said it was pre-civilized, pre-civilization.
Yeah.
Because it's always civilizations that begin to trap and enslave the people.
Yes, the whole system for thousands of years has been based on money, and it's money of all forms. It doesn't matter what it is. Money in itself is an unnatural thing. It's a substitute for real goods and barter, and eventually those who run the money will obviously take over and create their system, and you end up working for them, not for each other. And so all of the historians will always harp on about the birth of civilization, and what they mean is the creation of cities and the city-states.
Right.
Because a city is the most unnatural form of living for humans that you could possibly devise. And everything must come into a city to sustain it. By itself, it lives in an artificial climate, basically. They run on money, totally from the top to the bottom.
Yeah.
And they never have enough of it, of course. And from the money, the city-states would create armies. They could employ armies. Without money, you couldn't keep an army together to go and invade anybody and enslave anybody. And Plato himself said that the city would be the beehive, because culture in a city is now artificial. It's in flux. In other words, you can keep changing it and altering it and pointing it in the direction that you choose if you run the whole city. And that's why Nimrod, the builder of cities, is given such great status in the mystery religions. So, yes, all the changes come through the city, and then it's forced on the ordinary people who try to live on the land.
And the story is written in the Old Testament about Joseph in Egypt and how they collapsed the economy.
Yeah.
And they then Joseph gathered all the people out of the country and brought them into the cities.
Yeah.
And the pitiful thing is that many people see that more as prophecy than they do that the creatures who have written the Bibles, the holy books for the people all over the world,
mm-hmm.
are the ones that planned it and told about it, right?
Yeah.
There.
Mm-hmm. And really, it was an ongoing system even before. You see, the Old Testament is a Masonic rule book. It's allegory for the system which the higher Masons understand, because they're part of it. They help to run it. And slavery is okay.
I am.
In fact, slavery is natural for the supreme man. He has the right to run the lives of the lesser beings. And in fact, the Illuminati is nothing new. It's been here forever. And they wrote about it, and Plato called himself one of them. And so did the rest of the Greeks who studied in Egypt. Those who understood the secrets of rulership were all Illuminati.
And
those who were the ordinary people who were downloaded with their culture and their songs and folk songs and dances and believed everything was real, well, those people were the dead. They were always called the dead, and they still are today. If you don't understand what really is going on, you are classified amongst the dead, and therefore the ones at the top can do with you as they wish. In fact, that was the whole philosophy of Ayn Rand.
Are the ones at the top always in the bloodlines?
There's always been bloodlines, there's no doubt at all. I think they're specially bred for a psychopathic personality, personally.
Mm.
Because they, like any animal, and Plato went through this, that the guardians, as he called them, the guardian class, were specially inbred. And basically the world belonged to them. They ran the world. And they had a helping class. We would call them bureaucrats, really. They're more important than politicians, because they're always in power, and none of them are elected. And they know what the format is. So the bureaucracies themselves in federal government are very often third, fourth, fifth, or more generations of bureaucrats.
You know, in this governmental system here in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
So much is done by presidential executive orders.
Yeah.
And I I've told this before. I think it bears telling again when I was trying to find out. Because, you know, if you look at the Constitution, you see that the executive branch is not the lawmaking branch.
Mm-hmm.
So that executive orders could not be law. And
yeah.
That made sense to me. I could see it, but I wanted to find out. So I wound up calling, a branch of the administrative branch of the government in D.C.
Uh-huh.
And I spoke with a man named Brian Merchant.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking him about presidential decision directives, and he wanted to know exactly what are you trying to find out. And I said, well, what has been said, and everybody seems to believe it because somebody said it, is that when the president passes an executive order, after 90 days it becomes law.
Mm-hmm.
And he said executive orders are not law, and they do not become law. And so that leaves, you know, pretty much of a blank spot in here.
Mm-hmm.
When everything is being done by executive action.
Yeah.
And when I asked him to explain it, he said I'd have to talk to a lawyer there, and there wasn't one available. Well, I called back a couple years later just to have that confirmed. And when I asked for Brian Merchant, I was told that he was in a meeting, and I spoke with a man named Bill Leary. And I told him that I had the conversation with Brian, and I just wanted to confirm it, that Brian told me that executive orders are not law, and they do not become law. And he said that is correct, and there is no legal or criminal penalty for failure to obey an executive order.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if I could quote him, and when he asked me who I was, I said I was a freelance researcher, writer. I wanted to make sure I had my ducks in a row. And he wanted me to call the White House counsel to, you know, give me the details on it. Well, nobody ever returned a call. I did call back that office another time, and I talked to it. Sounded like a young, maybe a new worker or young aide. At least it sounded like a young man. And I told him once again, and I said, I want to know what happens if somebody doesn't obey an executive order, if there's no criminal or legal penalty for failure to obey an executive order, what happens if someone disobeys? He said, well, somebody would get fired, that's what. And that's when it clicked for me, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all the bureaucracies, it's all the agencies, it's the agency heads, and the executive orders are directed to them,
mm-hmm.
and they follow through with the directions, and it's never law.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it is treated as law.
Yeah, and the people generally acquiesce by their silence, which is the old common law. That's how laws were formed.
Uh-huh.
If you didn't object to it, or eventually it's tradition. It's called tradition.
Well,
and so you accept it. Yeah.
I wanted to find out about the process in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
and so I called the governor's office and just told him that I was writing a paper on, you know, Pennsylvania government, and I would like to know how the governor's executive orders are formulated and you know, what weight they carry. And she directed me to another office, and what I was told is this. Listen to this, Alan. Well, the heads of agencies, for example, the Department of Environmental Protection, Children Family Services, all these agencies within the state, the agency heads propose new regulations. And then the lawyer that is in the governor's office, his chief counsel, takes a look at them, reads them, and suggests to the governors which ones he should sign.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we've got the same thing going on from the federal level into the states.
You've got it from the UN level even. because every building code, from your septic tank to your water to your electrical codes, all come from the United Nations worldwide.
Yeah, but I was talking about the process, mm-hmm. how it happens here in the States.
Yeah.
And it has
I know,
nothing
and
to
you
do
know, all of these agencies are really NGOs. Even Children's Aid, we think now that it's really an official government department, but it's not. It's a non-governmental organization.
I don't think the agencies are NGOs. NGOs would be the all of the organizations that are set up.
Well, they actually have government backing, but they're not really a member of a part of government.
Yeah, I know.
Because they're unelected, you see.
Right, I know.
Yeah.
But those aren't the agencies.
Mm-hmm.
They're organizations that are founded, of course, by the elite anyway.
That's right.
And for our listeners, if you go into the Sweet Liberty website and go into the UN, you'll find out, and it'll blow your mind away, about the non-governmental organizations. I have a paper here, and it was written a long ago, I think in the early 40s, on non-governmental organizations and how they are going to bring in the New World Order.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's how the Soviet system was run.
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce was one of the oldest, Alan.
Yes, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And they've backed every global strategy and plan for years, yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, this is the thing. There are semi-secret organizations which have open fronts, the exoteric fronts on them, and the world's been run by them for thousands of years in every country. And you always have an official front religion in a country, and then you have the myriad of secret societies beneath them working within the structure of society and really guiding it, you know. And that's how it's all done.
Yeah.
So they run above and below, as they call it. It's both sides of it. It's the open side that's open to the public and the underworld, which the public don't even know exists half the time. So China's no different, ancient China to present-day China. India's exactly the same, and so is the West. So was the Greek civilization and the Egyptian. Nothing has really changed. Why change a technique that works so well?
Yeah, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
When I mentioned the Chamber of Commerce,
mm-hmm.
I didn't carry it to the nth degree because there are local, of course, chambers of commerce within the little cities and towns,
mm-hmm.
and then there are the state chambers of commerce,
yeah.
and then there's the national chamber of commerce, and then there is the international chamber of commerce, Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts,
mm-hmm.
same thing. It's an international
right.
organization, and they have what is called, I think, permanent something.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the UN.
Yeah, they've got permanent status there. All of
observer,
these organizations
observer
do.
Observer status.
Yeah. That's right.
I think that's what they call it.
Mm-hmm. And I think even there's an international one for mayors, town mayors.
Yes, there is.
And so it's everywhere. I mean, we are already global, you see, really.
When
I
called
in
Aaron last night,
yeah.
He was talking about China,
mm-hmm.
and all of the goods that are being brought in,
yeah.
and all of the containers, big crates and big, huge cans and et cetera, barrels, and
yeah.
there are none of them being inspected.
Uh-huh.
And he, you could hear his concern. He said, "We're getting set up for a takeover." And I said, "Yes. It's been going on for a long time."
Yeah.
He said, "The question is, what can we do?" And Alan, what we can do, I mean, in my mind, and is what I said to Darren, is exactly what he's doing,
mm-hmm.
is informing people.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people that wake up, the harder it is for the plan to continue to succeed.
I don't think it's a matter of stopping it, to be honest with you. I think it's what happens.
I didn't
as
say
we come
stop
through
it.
The chaos, you see.
He said, what can we do about it?
Uh-huh. See, it's a matter of what happens on the other side of the chaos that's coming.
Uh-huh.
We are coming through it. There's no doubt. It's gone too far ahead. And it's those with knowledge who can change things on the other side once we come through, rather than allow them to start all over again or into the next phase of what they plan for their new civilization.
I'd like you to repeat what you just said.
Yes, we are going to go through the chaos.
Yes,
I have
we
no
are
doubt
going
on
through the chaos now.
And, yep, and...
And what did you say about the other side?
It's coming, it's who knows on the other side when you come through, those that have the knowledge of what went before, who can change the beginning of the new society, so they don't follow out their plans to bring forth their new civilization. Because it's one horror show after another.
Yeah.
And it's at the birth of something that people who understand what's happening can make a difference. Once it's underway, it's very difficult to stop. It's always at the birth of something.
And
the birth comes
that,
after the chaos, you see.
You said that they begin to actually fight amongst themselves.
Yeah.
Which can bring them down too.
Yes, because
and then
they are.
They become their own
hungry,
worst enemies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Joe Average has a hard time understanding the addiction to power that these people have. And it truly is. It's like any addict who must have his fix. These people are so addicted to power, and they can all cooperate and take their cuts. As long as that throne, that world throne, is not in sight. But once it comes into sight, they all want that one seat. And that's when you start to turn on each other. And I always say when titans fight, the little people take a lot of beating in the process. So there will be a period of chaos, and we are coming. We are on the brink of it now. We're into it, in fact. It's not too far off.
Did you say they all want the what?
That throne, seat of power, yeah. And there's quite a lot of them, so they will start to turn on each other. And we will see it. We'll hear different reasons for it and accidents and so on, but it will start to happen. There's no doubt about that. These people are thoroughly, like any addict, they're thoroughly addicted to this thing called power. And they want to go down in history with their names chiseled in stone, yeah. So they will start to fall out, I would say, as they always seem to do.
And on another level of this, Alan,
yeah,
what occurred to me,
mm-hmm.
Knowing that thoughts are things, and that our energy is so. We're out of time here.
Mm-hmm.
We're out of time here. I talked about this last night,
uh-huh.
Just briefly, but we don't have time to do it. Folks, thank you for being here with us tonight. And Alan, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
And
yeah.
It was very nice to be back with our listeners. Darren will be back with you on Monday, and I will be back from time to time to visit with you, and this has been delightful. God bless you, ladies and gentlemen, and good night. Night, Alan.
Good night.
Notice, FirstAmendmentRadio.com is looking for new talent. Do you have the gift of gab? Do you got what it takes? Are you ready to go up against Alex Limbaugh?